G3. The Model of Being and Its Universal Laws. Number 11B.
Now we come to the next important step, B3, the Method of Divine Awareness. I called it this way. I don't know if after a year or two or 5 years I may find a better terminology or a better way of saying things, but we learn more and more that actually the terms don't matter so much as long as we get the atmosphere of it. Atmosphere, you know, divinely defined science is the atmosphere of God. So that little by little, really, we also begin to sense that the words are necessary, but they are no more so important because they are only a help in order to bring out the spiritual sense of things. I will talk later about it. But at this present moment, I want to point out something that seems to me very important, though I have already hinted at it before. Namely, if we are considering the change from old science to new science, that change takes perhaps 100 years, perhaps 200 years as a transitional period to bring in the effulgence of the new science, so that we have to be aware that what happens today is are only bits and pieces and not really the whole already. Namely, we see from the vantage point of Christian science or of the vantage point of the pinnacle of the Bible, which was the city four square that came down from heaven and was symbolizing really the cybernetic system of being, that if we look out from that standpoint, we see that a holistic science must, as we have said, have at least four sides, namely four big points, which we have considered first as Roman 1, namely it must first have a divine objective, namely the divine nature of being, which we would call God. So we investigated first the object of our investigation, namely, what does it mean, God's wholeness? What is that? And this is something that the new scientist hardly knows. He only knows that theology can no more be separated from science, which is the second point, the method of science. That they see, and I've cited various people in this way. Naturally, one could cite a thousand and few thousand thinking people that would underscore, I think you say underscore, huh? This idea that actually we can no more separate theology from science, because as we have seen, science has now meaning, and that meaning is the highest one knows, and the highest is always what we term through the symbol God. So we can, I just want to state, so that the new scientists have not touched very much on the first side of the holy city. They only see that there is one and it must be investigated. Like they said, the realm must be spirit, but we don't know very much about that spirit nor about the Holy Spirit. But the second side was was investigated by the new science mostly. What we have been considering as the criteria of science That is something that has that is foremost today in the minds of the forward thinkers. They investigate elements, categories, and so on, systems, dimensionalism, cybernetics, etc. But there is a third side of the Holy City, and that third side of the Holy City is Christianity, or as we like to point or express it, Christianity. It's the Christ consciousness. Now, the Christ consciousness, we must somehow free that term from its religious connotation, because the moment we say Christ, there is a great morphological field in the world since 2,000 years that says Christ, Jesus. Christ has something to do with Jesus. And that's naturally a great hindrance, an obstacle for our consciousness. Christ means the coincidence of God and man, the spiritual agreement between God and man. This is the Christ. And so that spiritual agreement between God and man has nothing to do with Jesus, and is a term that has come from the old languages and which should be translated really today into our modern language. So every time now I say Christ, just let's make a mental note which says, oh yes, that means the coincidence or spiritual agreement between God and man. What does it mean? It means that at the point of Christianity, when we come to point three, to the third side of the Holy City, which has to do with man's consciousness, that is only a Christianity, a realm of spiritual agreement with God, which in blunt words means nothing else than that our inward attitude, no matter if it's our consciousness or our spiritual awareness or spiritual attitude, must be in spiritual agreement with point one, with the first side of the city, and with the second side of the city, that it must have the same structural pattern as the one holistic being is. The pattern of the whole must be reflected in our consciousness, so that like can understand like. Only then do we have a Christ consciousness, a spiritual agreement where everything within us agrees in nature with the nature of God. Now, we have seen the nature of God is very, very manifold. It is not just thinking. And this is perhaps the problem I want to extract from that whole point of the method of divine awareness, that first of all we must see that that awareness is not just a mental awareness. It's not just an intellectual awareness. But that Christian Science teaches that Christian Science is intellectual and spiritual. Therefore, we must be aware that we approach the whole subject of Romans 1 and 2 not only in an intellectual way, but also in a spiritual way. If we approach it only in an intellectual way, something is very lacking. Namely, it will not develop afterwards. It has no seed within itself. If we take it only spiritually and say, well, the intellectual is not so necessary, the main thing is that I have the spiritual sense of it, then it will also go stale on us, because it will go wild. It needs the intellectual to be really spiritual, and it needs the spiritual to be really intellectual in the proper sense. So a holistic attitude therefore must culture that we perhaps first learn the letter, that we acquaint ourselves first intelligently, logically, with the letter of that holistic science which has been presented in Romans 1 and 2, and that afterwards we culture that intellectual sense to that point where we find the spiritual sense of it. So that through the intellectual and spiritual sense, we really get that what is necessary, the combination of it, I would call the scientific sense of the subject. I point this out because it's quite logical or understandable that we can be misled very easily. A textbook is here to be studied. And Mrs. Eddy puts a lot of stress on study the text, study the letter. And therefore, under study, the student is tempted to think that the study makes up the real approach to the subject. So he puts a lot of time and energy into the study of the letter. Well, that's fine, as long as the student doesn't think this is what is asked. This is only the beginning of it. And if he holds there, naturally he cannot not make any progress. And this is then what we hear, that the students come and say, I have done such a lot of study, and I have studied every day for hours, and I have studied now for years. But actually, I don't feel, where some say, that I have made great progress. Others come and say, oh, I have made a terrific progress. What makes the difference? The difference is, do we study with the intellect, or do we study with both the intellect and with the spirit? That's the great point. Then, namely, if we study with the intellect, then we use the following qualities. Then we try to study the letter, we try to learn, we try really to reason logically, all very fine qualities. We try to get understanding, knowledge. We try to accumulate knowledge, knowledge upon knowledge. We try to study one book, then another book, then another book, and we accumulate knowledge, all very fine under circumstances. And so we think we are a scientific thinker. But if we have only that concept of study, of making ourselves aware of the subject, then we have only touched part of it and not the whole. The whole says, well, this is right what you do, but you must also consider the spiritual side of it. And we ask, what is the spiritual side of it? What is the spiritual side against the intellectual side? Do we only study with the head, with the intellectual, or do we also study, so to say, with the heart, which is more the spiritual way? And it would be a very interesting little study for every student once to go to one or two or three chapters in the textbook, if not through the whole textbook, and just ask one question. What does actually Mrs. Eddy say? What is necessary so that I can spiritualize, so that I can understand being? Is it just studying the letter, just knowing the letter, just remembering the letter, just acquiring here a truth and there a truth? Or is not the textbook full, much fuller than with the letter, with the spirit? Here we read, if you only read one or the other chapter, if you only read, for instance, prayer or the sixth chapter, which has a lot to do just with science, with the new science, there already we find that there are so many other qualities necessary which we think are not really qualities of awareness. Namely, she would ask us that we would have to have pure desire, not just knowing and knowledge. Pure desire, pure motives. Are our motives pure? Do we study with pure motives? Or do we study with the motives that I know more than the other fellow? With humbleness, are we humble in our study? Or do we think I know more than the other fellow? Are we humble in so far that we are still thinking about the first beatitude, which says, I know that I know nothing? Have we that humbleness? It's all those questions of unself-love, that we study the truth for truth's sake and not for the sake of getting something out of it, of finding a solution for our problem. That is not selfless and not unself. Do we have that attitude within ourselves, with honesty, with spiritual living? Do we really give to the spiritual more value than to the material? Do we put the spiritual first and the material second? Do we value the spiritual more than the material? Do we study with gratitude? Are we grateful for life, truth, and love? Do we study that way? Or do we study it so that we say life, truth, and love should give us something, should bless us, should gain something? That's not pure motive. That's not spiritual sense. Do we study with a sense of great receptivity, that we are always open? Or have we shut our door? Have we shut our door by thinking, I know already quite a lot. Who on earth can tell me something more? Or have we that openness and receptivity for something new? Do we study by being willing to leave all for Christ's sake? To be willing to lay down a mortal sense of things, a material sense of things, a personal sense of things? Are we willing to be seen that our personal sense doesn't matter, that that is no factor in our study, in our being? Is that alive within us? Do we study with the Christ spirit, or do we study with a human spirit, with a human attempt, or with the Christ spirit? Do we study with an awe before the subject, with great wonderment before the subject? That, do we study with the feeling that that it is the grace of God that we are at all at that position, that we know about this science and can study this science? Do we feel that grace to think that there are another 5 billion people who don't know it, who are still walking in the scientific wilderness, so to say, and haven't the faintest idea what being is all about, what life is all about, why they are here, what is their purpose in life? Are we grateful for that? Do we feel the grace of it? Do we feel that we are chosen, that we are a chosen people without having had to earn it? We don't live by the work, by our works. We live by grace. Are we grateful for that? Do we entertain that inner spiritual sense that is nurturing that? Do we anticipate the end, the fulfillment? Or do we study with a sense, will I ever get there? Do we study with a sense, Will I ever understand it? Will it ever work for me? Will I ever get something out of it? Will it ever bless me? Will it ever bless my family? Will it ever do something to my business? Is that the attitude? Is that the spiritual attitude which we have, which we must have? Or our studies intellectual? So these are qualities that must go along with our studies, so that Christian Science is both intellectual and spiritual, and it must be both. Do we study with that trust within ourselves that the idea is working, that the idea is working individually, collectively, universally? Do we study with that sense within ourselves that nothing can stop that idea? That idea has all the power to pull through. Is that the spiritual sense with which we study? Just ask yourself all these questions. Then, only then we have a holistic awareness. That's the point three. Namely, that the intellectual and the spiritual must be one. Combined with this question naturally come up various other questions that always are in the forefront. Namely, what is it that enables us to fathom the science of being? What is it? Is it actually the intellectual? Is it actually the wisdom on the intellect? And I have already quoted that sentence which always has made a great impact on my consciousness, because you can gather from the nature of my education that naturally I have been engaged in the intellectual activity a lot, or I couldn't go through university and through a PhD. That's quite natural. I had to use my brain for it. And therefore train the intellect. And therefore, this is something that would seem to be natural, that would be the way of how to get hold of a subject. And therefore, I was always very much impressed, right from my students' days on, where Mrs. Eddy says that Christian Science may absorb the attention of sage and philosophers, of sage and philosophers, of those who we consider to be intellectually in the first rank. And then she said, but the Christian alone can fathom it. And so I saw, golly, here she says that actually the intellectual and the Christ spirit must go hand in hand, or else we cannot fathom it. And as I said, I had a wonderful example with my mother, who was everything else but an intellectual. Was growing up in a little village way out in the woods, and was the poorest of the poorest in the village, and could only go a few years through school at that time, and was sent away to France to earn her money when she was still a kid, not even knowing what was the difference between a man and a woman, really out of the woods, no education at all. I could see her later on when she saw something about science and she felt I could do something with science, that she began to learn to write again. And to learn German, she was German, and to learn German again, to learn something about orthography, about syntax. Later, when I was already in school, she had no education, but she was a Christian. A Christian, not in a human way a Christian, also, but mostly because she was a holistic thinker. Everything I remember of her was always holistic. every time what she did. She said to me, don't be like Saul who goes out to find the little ass that was lost. Don't do that. Go up to the prophet, to Samuel, and he will tell you that if you are king of the whole of Israel, then everything which is within Israel belongs to you, and then your asses are found. Who on earth does that as a Christian Scientist? They all run after the little asses and try to find the little asses they have lost or never had. That's not holistic. That's old science. Think of the Christian attitude she had, and what we should have. That sense that we take in the whole. And Christian means that we are in spiritual agreement with the whole. Christ means also Emmanuel, God with us, the whole with us, the whole with me, not the part with me. You don't get little shares. You get always the whole. And so let's see that is an attitude within us, so that only that can respond really to the influx of revelation. If we have that attitude within ourselves, then the fourth side of the holy city will make sense, namely that science reveals itself. And then we get to revelation and no more to the long road of reason, the long road of thinking out things with our brain, with our intellect. This is terrific. So we can see that we must really put a lot of attention to that third side, because the new scientist doesn't do it yet. The new scientist doesn't think of that. You can read all these wonderful, most fascinating books that come out now by the dozens. They are absolutely fascinating. And what is fascinating about them, always point the second side of the city, namely the method of science, the new method of science. They never tell us very much, if at all anything, about what is the new scientist as an attitude, as a man. They never tell us that changes the man, that changes the scientist, that he becomes another man. He still goes on to be the old man. Okay, we make a break here.